Hello, my friends. My name's Naomi, and I am the host of Weird Mythic Podcast. It is a podcast all about that strange and unusual things that are not easily explained in this world. Talk a lot about cryptids, everything from the Bunyip, all the way to Bigfoot, Pukwudgies, Thunderbirds, you name it, I'll cover it. Go ahead and listen to Weird Mythic Podcast anywhere you get your podcast fix. I hope you tune in soon.
Hey everyone, I have a very special episode lined up for you guys this week. A while back, I had the pleasure of sitting down with Tina Irwin, a bona fide ghost helper who has spent her career teaching the living to help the dead. As you can imagine, that line of work makes way for a lot of great conversations, and of course, comes with its fair share of ghost stories. So today, we're sharing some of those stories with you. Now, before we get into it, make sure to go give Tina a follow and check out her books on metaphysics. I'll have her information linked down in the show notes. But without further ado, let's go ahead and get into the episode. Hey, Tina, how are you?
I'm doing great, Courtney. Thank you so much for having me on your show.
Thank you so much for coming on. I really appreciate you taking the time out of your day. Before we get into the meat of things, would you mind just kind of explaining to my audience, you know, what all your work kind of entails just briefly, as well as where they can find you online?
People can find me at contact@ghosthelpers.com. And on that website, ghosthelpers.com, there are prayers you can use to help the living and the dead. And I got into this because I felt like as the years went by, I became a ghost magnet. And there are thousands of people out there that know exactly what I'm talking about.
Right.
And I worked and worked and worked to figure out, how do you help the dead? What do you do about this? And I'm a retired naval officer.
Oh,
you know, well, naval officers aren't supposed to see ghosts.
Right.
But I did. And then I discovered I'm not the only one. There are many, many people in all walks of life who see them, feel them, sense them, all ages, including infants, children, animals. Oh my gosh, animals see a lot of ghosts. And I thought, you know, maybe a contribution I could make in this lifetime would be to teach people how they can help the dead. Because when you help the dead, the service you do for the living is beyond calculation.
Right. Do you mind kind of explaining more on how that works in the sense of how it helps the living as well?
Yes. When someone dies, there's the common question is, you know, I don't know where they are. I don't know what happened to them. I like to think that they did this, but I don't really know. And then they search for psychics, so they pay all this money to psychics. And I am one, so I mean, I know wherever I speak. If people want to pay me to just talk to a loved one, and I'll help them cross over. But once done is done.
Right.
Because what happens is when you're grieving someone you love and you cannot go through mortal life without experiencing grief, it is one of those check marks. As a human being, you must learn to handle grief. But if you have a ghost standing by your shoulder, and you can feel them, or you can sense them, or your hair stands up, that ghost is incurring karma by interfering with your life.
Hmm.
You are still have attachment to that soul. So you're suffering with the grief, and the soul is suffering because they haven't crossed over. And why is crossing over so important? I'm so glad you asked. Because I'm getting this information from a very unusual and precious source, the 23rd Psalm. A lot of people think somebody like me is not Christian or they don't believe in God. I love God and the concepts of compassion that are represented in the 23rd Psalm. Lo, though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil. You know, that always bothered me. What would it say? Why would a psalm say, I will fear no evil? What is that? And after I started helping the dead, I understood what that was and why they needed help. Because you leave the third dimension, the dimension of time and space and gravity and the physicality of having a mortal body and touching things. When the soul exits the body, and I can describe that process, you leave this frame. Who you have always been doesn't change. If you're a crabby old individual, you're going to be a crabby individual in death.
Yeah.
If you're a sarcastic saloon slinger, that's what you're going to be in death. If you're a murderer in life, let me tell you, you are horrible in death.
Yeah. I feel like I've come across, unfortunately, one of those just in my own life. But it just seems to me that when you have whoever you are, like you said, in life, if you're a nasty person in life, if you're a negative presence in life, you're probably going to be a negative presence in death, and vice versa. If you're, you know, positive and, you know, a positive light in this world, then that's what you'll be from beyond. So I like that you brought that up. And the other thing that I kind of wanted to go into, kind of building off of that, like you mentioned, is what is the process, I guess, for lack of better phrasing, when you pass on? What does that look like?
I think that's an extremely important question. And no one talks about it except the Tibetans. And the process is described in elegant detail, because I want people to know, where is she getting this information? The Tibetan Book of Living and Dying by Sogyal Rinpoche, the Tibetan Book of Living and Dying, is a fabulous treatise on dying. It helps you to understand the process. It's not a mystery. It's very mechanical. God is always logical. Mm-hmm. So it's like when you leave a building, you shut all the lights off. All the body systems start to shut down. When my brother died, I saw that happen. And this process is the same if it's an instant death or if it's a long protracted death. It's always the same. All the body systems start to shut down. The energy leaves the extremities and it finally centers in the core of the body. And the seed atom of the soul that holds your Akashic records is in your heart.
Okay.
And as the soul leaves the body, you're leaving through the crown, and it looks like this white, filmy stream. And you take with you the memories of everyone you've ever met, everything you've ever done, every place you've ever been, everything you ever touched. Those are Akashic records. And those
are kind of, sorry, not to interrupt you, but is that along the lines of seeing your life flash before your eyes? Is that where that comes from?
Yes and no. You do see your life flash in front of your eyes. It's an emotion of sound that just streams by super fast. And you get to see all the things that happened in this life, your first kiss or when you were born or how much you were loved or the abuse that you suffered. And if you had a really good life, then you see that with so many emotions. And if you died suddenly, you're going to grieve your death. You can't help it.
Right.
You're leaving the people you love. The dead grieve. It's a huge revelation. They grieve sometimes so dramatically, they absolutely weigh down the living.
Right.
And back to the 23rd Psalm, they talk about God, thy rod and thy staff comfort me. He restoreth my soul. When you cross over into the heaven world, you go to the, like a step up transformer, you go to the fourth dimension. It's that space between the physicality of mortal life and the light of God. And this is the whole point of near-death experience. They were trying to let people know, please don't be afraid. When you see that light, welcome it, move into it, embrace that, open yourself up to this beautiful light. No matter who you are, no matter what you've done, there is no judgment,
right?
There's no prejudice. It's just the light of God, and it's glorious. I've seen it untold numbers of times.
The way you describe it is very just beautiful and calming. I think that, myself included, even, you know, working in this field for nearly a decade, it's easy to fear death, whether that be, you know, a spirit that may be haunting your house or just the concept of your own mortality. It's really easy to fear, but the way you describe it is very just soothing. It's just all that was is now something bigger than yourself. But I do see that they would grieve as well, which kind of leads me into my other question, which we touched on a little while ago, but my house, my listeners know this, but it's connected to an unsolved murder in my town. It didn't happen here, but I do believe that the victim of the murder itself is still here. And I guess I just kind of want to know, because I don't obviously know her, I didn't know her in life, but how do I know if she needs help? And how do I go about helping her if she doesn't?
If she needs help, I have a solution for that. Just one second right here. I wrote this book called The Crossing Over Prayer Book.
I was going to ask you about that.
This is 88 prayers that help the living and the dead. And on prayer number 12 is the crossing over prayer for a murdered loved one.
Wow.
Well, you don't have to know the person, because the heart of compassion knows no boundaries. The heart of compassion knows no strangers. And if you go to a place or you say that prayer for this murdered person, and even though it's kind of emotional because it's a family member, I speak to parents of murdered children. When your family member is murdered, this cloak of grief never leaves you, this cloak of injustice. If you have the power, because you feel powerless with murder, you feel powerless with suicide or abortion or miscarriage, if you can feel powerful, and the full is the light of God, without an intermediary, you do not need an intermediary. It's called the priesthood of all believers.
Okay.
When you fill yourself up with love and compassion, and you can say the crossing over prayer for a murdered loved one, or you can just say the crossing over prayer.
Mm-hmm.
What you're doing is you are opening a doorway for the light of God to come to that soul. The power of this is beyond explanation, and anyone can do it. And I'll give you an example if you would like a story.
Yeah. Of course.
I've told this story many times, I admit that. But it's one of my very favorites. Mm-hmm. I got an email from a single mom in upstate New York. And her father was a convicted, executed murderer.
Oh, God. Okay.
He killed a lot of people.
Right.
And he was evil to the core. And I can explain that a little bit, too, why that happens. But for now... And so she said, he haunts me day and night. He just never leaves me. But he does something so horrible, and I am his prisoner. I don't know what to do. You have to help me.
Mm-hmm.
He keeps telling me to murder my 4-year-old daughter.
Gosh.
Day after day after day. You wonder why there are all these murders in people's homes? Sometimes there are ghosts that are speaking into the ears of the living, only they don't think anyone will believe them. And she said, my daughter, I just suspect she hears it. You got to cross him over. And I said, well, you know, I can do that.
Mm-hmm.
What if you did it? What if you used the crossing over prayer and you did this yourself and you took your power back from this man who's probably had power over you for I don't know how many lifetimes. But in this lifetime, you take your power back from him. Not in a mean, cruel, or vengeance way, but in a powerful way. And I had her bring in what I call spiritual police and angels of transition to surround this man. And she said the crossing over prayer over and over and over and over. And all of a sudden, she felt this shift.
Mm-hmm.
And in her heart, she knew he was gone. And then her little girl says, Mommy, Mommy, the bad man is gone now.
Oh, wow.
And she was chilled to the bone, realizing her daughter could hear what her grandfather was saying.
That is chilling.
It is a horrible story with, ironically, a happy ending. Because back to the 23rd Psalm, how does the soul of a murderer get restored if you don't cross them over?
Right. Well, how and do they find the, like, you know, just not justice, but I guess, what's the word I'm looking for?
You have to understand that when you cross someone over, they cross over with their karmic load.
Oh, okay.
Crossing someone over doesn't erase the karma the person created in that lifetime. Mm-hmm. All crossing over does is remove them from the fourth dimension. They still have to balance the karma they created. But maybe the next life, they won't be a murderer.
Right. Well, kind of off of that same page, if, let's say, the person who did it, again, this is unsolved, but it happened quite some time ago. If their spirit is here, hypothetically speaking, and she wants to stay, is there a way to get rid of just the person who perpetrated the crime, or would it be all or nothing?
Well, you're not gaining anything by she wants to stay.
Yeah. Or I guess they want to stay, or is it usually they don't know how to
stay? People want to stay, and they are torturing the living. Mm-hmm. And I discovered kind of by accident, once I'm on the scene, they have to leave. I don't give them a choice. You have to leave right now. Mm-hmm. And you no longer get to influence the living. Even if you have good intentions, if you cross over, you get to review the life just lived. You get to have a much longer rest. One of the problems we have is people are coming back in 1 to 5 years. It's way too soon. Mm. Human souls need the light of the divine. They need counsel with the great ones. They need to feel it, especially if they have followed a Christian faith or whatever the faith was. It's irrelevant. There's no religion in the afterlife. Mm-hmm. It's like newsflash. Let's say you are filled with the light of Christ consciousness. The core of your soul is filled with this light, or the light of the Buddha nature. There's such a beauty to that. Why would you deprive anyone of that? And when they're a ghost, they don't know what they're missing. And that's you can true. Help them.
That's true. The other thing that I kind of wanted to circle back to, just while we're still on the topic of, you know, murders, unfortunately, you mentioned that if someone is, I forget the way that you put it, but if they're negative, if they're like a murderer during their life, they're going to be absolutely awful in their afterlife. Do you mind elaborating a bit more on that? I know we've kind of gone back and forth a bit, but just to kind of circle back.
Let's look at serial killers, the Jeffrey Dahmers, the Richard Specks, the Son of Sam killer. These individuals come in this way. They're pieces of their soul through abuse, through fill in the blank list of things, create massive trauma in the individual so that their auric field, their immune system, their force field around their body looks like Swiss cheese. That's what sexual, spiritual, physical, and emotional abuse does to a body. It's destructive. So pieces of that soul are shaved off life after life until what's shaved off is their conscience. There's no more Jiminy Crickets. There's no conscience left. That's why there's the coldness in their eyes that the people write about, the mystery writers talk about. They have no conscience. You're no different than swatting a mosquito to them. They might get a sexual pleasure in the act of murder. And when you cross them over, it is the only way that soul has that elements of that were all shaved off restored. Only the light of God can do that. Staying in the fourth dimension, he was a murderer, he should be punished. Why should I cross him over? Dude, do you really want these people to keep coming back this way?
Right.
You could change that.
Crossing over, like you said, doesn't clear out their karma.
No, it does not.
Face their judgment regardless of, it's just you claiming your space back is what I'm getting from this, I'm assuming.
You need to take your power back from people who have done horrific things. You always have the right to defend yourself. And whether it's from a ghost who has terrorized you to a ghost who was sweet and kind, but you still need to cross them over because you're being compassionate to that soul. And some ghosts are so remarkable that you remember them till your very last moment. I have a Civil War story about that one.
If you're, would you mind sharing that? Just
I got a call from a homeowner in Virginia Beach, Virginia. Mm-hmm. And she said, you know, she was in a condo. She said, I think I have a ghost. Okay. I don't think it's a bad ghost, but I think it's time for the ghost to go. Okay. So I have her permission and I do remote viewing. So I remote viewed her location because I was living in California at the time. Much more efficient to remote view.
Right.
If you happen to have that skill set. And so I also have this odd skill set where I can sift back through stacks of time and find, because a ghost isn't always in your time frame. So this ghost went back to, I think, 1862, 1863. The Civil War was 1860 to 1865, five bloody years with the loss of 800,000 people. And I'm guessing it was about 1862. I got the impression she was at Antietam, but somehow she found this homeowner who was not near Antietam, and which was a terrible Civil War battle at the beginning of the war. And this woman meets me, and she's just covered in blood. She's got this apron on. You can barely tell that she's got an apron on. She says, "What took you so long?" And looking around like, "What?
Are you talking to me?"
Are you talking to me? She said, yeah. "I have been waiting for you. I just can't do it alone." And I said, "Well, we need to cross you." She said, "You see these 200 dumb guys? They don't even know they're dead. They think they're going to get up and go back into battle. They're clueless. I know I'm dead. I got hit by a stray bullet helping one of these dumb guys. But they're big dumb guys, and they don't understand they've died, and I can't abandon them. Won't you please help me cross them over?"
Wow.
And I said, "Helen," her name was Helen Stanton. I said, "I'll be happy to do that for you." Mm-hmm. And she would not leave until all 200 of those men were crossed over. And the Civil War was butchery on a horrific level. And we got them all crossed over. And I said, "Helen, honestly, it's your turn now." And she said, "Okay, I just couldn't leave them, you know?" I said, "I know. You're in the karma of helping them. You're a really good person." She's one of my ghostly heroines, because she was so kind.
That also, I mean, I feel like you've shared a lot of just like beauty in what is normally very grim, but I kind of wanted to expand on one point that you made in that story where you said that they don't know that they're dead. I don't want to say how is that possible, because obviously it's very traumatic, but how does a soul kind of come to that realization, especially in the event of a traumatic death?
If you, let's say you have, like my brother had a stage 4 cancer diagnosis. He knows he's dying. I did all these preparations for him before he died. But let's say that your car breaks down, and this happened before my brother died. He worked for the Screen Actors Guild in Hollywood. And I got a phone call from him one day, and he said, "You have got to help me." I said, "Okay." He said, "A friend of mine, he was a producer at Paramount, was just struck by a car and killed." And he said, "I can feel her. She doesn't know she's dead." Mm-hmm. And I said, "Oh, so I get the job of telling her." And he said, "Yeah, you're going to have to talk to her." And so I connected to her through my brother. He was my link. We have something called Aka cords, and I need to explain that to your listeners because they're going, how in all of Los Angeles did you find this woman by the side of the road? That's a very good question. Akashic records are created through the connections we make from Aka cords, which come from right where your solar plexus is. It's called this thin blue line of Kino Aka substance, which comes from the Huna tradition. And Kino Aka, meaning that is the substance that records all of your life experiences.
Wow, okay.
And every person you know. So he knew her. So I followed my connection to my brother. And then I could see her almost immediately as soon as I connected to my brother, because he was so concerned for her. Mm-hmm. So I get to where she's standing, and she's walking back and forth next to her Mercedes. And she says, she's on the phone, and then she's trying to talk to the cop, and the cop isn't listening to her. And she's just angry and frustrated. And I walked up and I said, "Yeah, you look like you could use some help." And she said, "Well, I don't understand what's wrong with people. Nobody will pay attention to me. What is wrong?" And I said, "Well, I need to tell you that you died in this car accident. You know, you were sideswiped when your car broke down. And you died." And she said, "I can't be dead. I have a new appointment on Friday. I have a birthday party for my daughter on Saturday and a big meeting with a whole bunch of producers at Paramount next week. I cannot be dead."
Right.
So I brought in an angel, and we put this beautiful golden blanket around her shoulders. And I said, "There is no more nail appointment, birthday party, or meeting at Paramount. It's over now. It's time to get ready to go. And this angel is going to guide you to that light right over there. And they'll explain everything when you get to the other side." And she said, I don't want to be dead. I have a daughter. I have a husband. Mm-hmm. I have a life." I said, "I know you do. I know you're going to grieve this. But you can't stay by the side of the road, because she creates a magnetism for more accidents and more death."
Oh, wow.
"You really need to cross these people. You see all these little crosses on the side of the road and the flowers where people died? Say the crossing over prayer there."
Okay.
"Because you'll have more accidents at that site, because you'll notice that, you know, all these crosses start accumulating. The subconscious of drivers sees those ghosts, and they're instantly distracted. When you cross them over, you create a safer space for other drivers." And in her case, she went into just like this emotional shock, and the angel smiled at her and guided her into the light, and she was gone.
Wow.
She had, and I've seen this happen again and again and again and again. I've seen settlers who were murdered in their sleep, and they didn't understand why the sun didn't come up. And some of them were so angry, they said, "Well, you know, I prayed to Jesus all my life. How could this happen to me?" Hmm. And I said, "Well, sometimes it's not up to Jesus to stop somebody from, one human being from murdering another. It's just what happens, and I'm so terribly sorry." And when you're actually talking to them, you're not saying, "Oh my God, I'm talking to a ghost." You're talking to a soul that used to have a mortal body, who had family, who loved people, who loved their life, who loved living, and they didn't want to die like that.
Right.
And if you're kind and gentle, "I'm so sorry that you died this way. I'm so sorry." And I have the ability to make it so they can't see their butchered bodies.
You're able to make that happen?
I can make that happen, yeah.
That's.
I just have an ability to be able to assist them. Some traumas you don't really need. You're already dead. How much more trauma do you need?
Well, I feel like that could also just be, make it that much more difficult to pass on. Because I'm assuming that when most of us pass, the ultimate goal is to cross over, but maybe we don't know necessarily how to do that. And if you're going to see your own corpse, then would that make it worse or make it more difficult to leave, or do you think it would have the opposite effect?
It causes a soul to go through this whole kaleidoscope of emotions. Their life just passed before their eyes, but they weren't sure what was happening to them. And they look down and they might see a butchered body. They might see the things that happened to them. And they're horrified by what they see. And they right. and then they turn around and there's dark and they don't see it anymore. You don't see it forever. You might see it briefly. Do you remember the movie Ghost with Patrick Swayze and Demi Moore? Yeah. And that was actually extraordinarily accurate. Patrick Swayze saw his body and he kept running after the guy. He didn't realize he was dead. And he looked around and when he saw the body, his visual reaction was actually very accurate. Horror. I had a life. You heard him say, I had a life. I hear this over and over. I had a life. I was in love.
Mm-hmm. I had plans.
I had plans for this life. I had things I wanted to do. And then if you're the person who has to say, I'm so terribly sorry. And if you're just patient, if you're just kind, and you actually can talk to them, and there are an awful lot of psychic people out there who can. Mm-hmm. If you can do that, and you can be gentle about it. I mean, some people are pretty straightforward. Hey, dude, you died. You got to get on with it. You don't have to be so hard. And especially when you're dealing with children. Children are so clueless. God. You know, a child who dies doesn't understand they're dead. And I had this happen with my grandson when he was 11 months old. I got a phone call from my son and his wife, and they said, this baby has never sounded like this. We think there's somebody here. And we know you cleared the house a while ago, but something's changed. He's screaming like someone's stabbing him.
Oh, gosh. Okay.
You know, if you have your psychic on speed dial, it can be helpful. Mm-hmm. So I reviewed their house, and there was the baby, and they said, he is looking at someone, and it's not us. Okay, the big clue there. Mm-hmm. And so I found this little girl. I don't remember her name. And she would pinch him. So he would scream because he could see her and nobody else could see her. And she could get a reaction out of him.
Right.
And I said, sweetie, how did you end up in this house? And she said, well, I followed his sister home from school. She was 6 at the time. Mm-hmm. Or 8 at the time. I remember how old she was. She was in school. And she said, I go home with a different little girl every night. Okay.
Okay, that's creepy.
I said, where's your mommy? And she said, I stand next to mommy and she just cries. Remember, the dead can travel with the speed of thought. They can be anywhere. If you think of them, they can be right beside you because there's no gravity. There's no intervening space. You think of it and you're there. And I said, well, sweetie, what's the last thing you remember? Oh, I was swinging. I was swinging so high, and I said, let me guess. You let go to see if you could fly like a bird. Yeah, or a butterfly. And then I was standing next to mommy, and she was crying, and I don't understand why nobody talks to me except you. I don't know where you came from. So I brought in a child angel, which is something else you can do. If you think you have children present, dead children, bring in a child angel.
Okay.
And have them slip this energetic golden hand into the hand of the soul. And it's almost electric because it creates an energetic frequency connection to the soul who may be cold and lonely and depressed. Mm-hmm. And she said, I'm not going to go back to see mommy. I said, no, sweetheart. When you fell off that swing, you died. And you're going to go see that light over there. You're going to go and be in that light. And it's going to feel so good. And this will help your mommy feel better. And they'll help you on the other side. And then she and the angel went skipping off into the light. And my job was done.
That's so sweet. I mean, obviously, it's sad. But having the ability to, like, help anybody in that way, especially somebody as innocent as a child, that is just beyond beautiful. Not to just like fangirl about it, but I was wondering if we could just circle back to your book really quick. Would you mind telling us kind of where we can find it, or if you want to send me a link just so I can keep it in my show notes for people to purchase?
Sure. It's called, this is the picture of it. It's called the Crossing Over Prayer Book. Mm-hmm. And it's 88 prayers that help the living and the dead. If your relative or your neighbor or your son or daughter takes their own life, the shock and trauma is so great. Mm-hmm. But and a lot of the prayers that were for suicide, their additional prayers, came from a mom in North Dakota whose son took his life. He was 17. And she wrote to me and she said, "Do you think I could use the crossing over prayer for suicide for my son?" And I said, "Absolutely, you can do that." And just say it over and over and over. And it connects you to him in a karmically correct way, because you're doing the very last service you can do for him as his parent.
Right.
And it's very difficult on some levels and extremely powerful on others. So she said the prayer over and over and she felt a shift. It's hard to describe that, but the energy around her changed and she felt like he was free. And she said she could sleep at night. And then a couple months later, she said, "You know, can you write a prayer that I can say for my son now that he's in the heaven world? So he'll know that I love him and I forgive him and I only wish the best for him and I'm not angry." So I wrote a prayer for that. And you have to remember, I write all these prayers, but I have a lot of help from the other side.
Right.
It's like I take dictation, shall we say. And it's important to make that point. But she, you know, writes to me about how much freer she feels. She is still letting him know she loves him, but she's not suffering from that clinging attachment. She has set him free. And I told her something that never occurred to her. And I explained that in this lifetime, your son took his life. And it's such a sad thing. But it's possible, because people who commit suicide do it life after life after life after life.
Wow.
It is a karmic pattern, and there has to be one point at which it's broken.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, suppose that's true. I don't know if it's true for your son. I'm not telling you what his past lives are. I'm making a supposition. If it were true, and this is the lifetime that you crossed him over, and his soul was completely restored, he received emotional healing on levels that you as a moral mom couldn't ever have provided him, but you gave him the greatest gift, and that was crossing over because of your love for him. And perhaps in his next life, he will live a whole life because right. of what you did in this life, because the energy of this entire scenario will not have been wasted.
Right. And kind of while we're on that, like the topic of, you know, reincarnation and stuff like that, I find it somewhat funny because I've always believed in reincarnation, but I also always have believed in the paranormal and in spirits. I'm kind of getting the idea now, just after talking with you for the last half hour, but just for my listeners and to make sure that I'm following correctly, because you seem like you probably have some extra expertise in this area. How can those two concepts exist at one time? Like, how can there be ghosts, but also be reincarnation at the same time?
That is an excellent question. And I'm probably not the only one, nor are you, who has pondered this. And the answer that I have come to the conclusion of is that you can reincarnate from the fourth dimension, which would explain serial killers. It would explain people who commit mass murder on an epic level, people who have no conscience in any way, shape, or form. And they die, they go into the fourth dimension, they come back pretty quickly. And they reincarnate from that dimension. And they have not healed anything. In fact, I have seen people who came back, who died in the Vietnam War in the 60s and the 70s, And they came back in 5 years, and you can still see the bullet marks on their body. This is astounding. And the entire movement in the 60s against the Vietnam War was all these people who died in World War II came back super fast, 5 years. And there is documentation about this. If you've had a tough death or an arduous life and you cross over, you might not come back for 152 years or even longer. But if you come back in 5 years, and there are documented cases of people who died in World War II, especially Pearl Harbor, they knew where they died, they came back in 5 years, and they went back to visit their original families. Their families, who didn't ever believe in reincarnation, took one look at him when he walked through the door, and they knew who he was, broke down and started sobbing. They got him back. And remember, he had parents in the new life, but he found the parents from the old life. It was a fascinating story. And so there was one guy who kept having recurring dreams of dying on a submarine. He died on it. He was attacked by a U-boat, and the submarine sank. Mm-hmm. And he was able to name the submarine, the crew members, and there was his picture right there. So we have this documentation. It's well known, not because I said so, but because there are so many different researchers who have looked at this. And it can make a big difference in understanding this. That's how it can happen.
Right. So it's more of you pass on to the fourth dimension, and then you can either cross over or come back. But the spirit exists only in the fourth dimension.
The elements of the soul, I tend not to use the word spirit, because a spirit can be a black magician who's not ever going to reincarnate because their bodies are too fragile. They use people who are super evil as this puppet on a string, and they get them to do their bidding. That's how that works. So when you cross them over, you deny the puppet master in the lower astral realms that soul. I've crossed over thousands of those people and thousands of those magicians. And some of them are glad to be finally out of that darkness, even though they were pretty evil at that time. So all those things can make a huge, huge difference.
Right. And is that also in and of itself, even if it was, like you said, a negative person, that still helps that person in the long run, because they're not being used basically as
pawns. They're not pawns.
Exactly. That's exactly the point. So I don't know. That's just interesting to me. But anyways, I won't take up too much more of your time. But before I let you go, would you mind just reminding my listeners again where they can find you? And just so you guys are aware listening at home, I will have her book linked in the show notes so you guys can check it out and purchase it if you are experiencing anything like this, because I think it is a very important message to help these people versus just allowing them to kind of take up space. So anyways, if you want to remind them.
I have written 8 books. Three of the 8.
Okay. We'll list a bunch of them then.
Ghost Stories from the Ghost Point of View, volumes 1, 2, and 3. That cover everything from possession to premonitions and all kinds of things in between. So all of my books are available on Amazon.com. There, you can go to ghosthelpers.com. All the books are there. There's a grief book. There's Karma and Frequency, How to Raise Your Frequency, Soul Evolution, Past Lives and Karmic Ties. I've written several books that discuss karma and how it affects you in a positive way, as well as a negative way. Everything is a karmic, it's action and reaction.
Right.
So when you look at it that way, it makes a difference. But the Crossing Over Prayer Book is a really important tool book for anyone who deals with the dead. If you're a ghost hunter, would you want your grandmother hunted, or would you want them helped?
Right.
If you are in a nurse in a hospital, I have nurses who take the Crossing Over Prayer, print it out, and put it throughout different places, because it helps people who die, and it makes a huge difference in hospitals. I had a guy walk through battlefields in Belgium with the Crossing Over Prayer, and he heard all these little thank yous and people tugging at his shoulder saying thank you. if these things are achingly simple and they work, and I cannot be the only one who knows how to do this. The more people who know, the more compassion this world will have for each other, the living and the dead. And I, Courtney, my hat is off to you for allowing me to share all this. Thank you so much. I am so grateful.
This is so fascinating. We'll have to get you back on and we'll discuss further, just because, again, I just feel like not a lot of people are doing the work that you're doing, and that's something that can be definitely mitigated. So I appreciate you coming on. We'll have, you know, all of her books that I can find in the show notes. But other than that, guys, I just really appreciate you being here, Tina. Thanks so much.
Thank you so much.
This episode of Haunts was written and produced by me, Courtney Hayes, in collaboration with Tina Irwin. If you enjoyed today's episode, make sure you check out Tina's work over on her website, which I'll have linked down in the show notes. While you're there, be sure to leave us a 5-star review, follow us on social media at HauntsCast, and join our mailing list at hauntscast.com. Thank you again for listening, and until next time, happy haunting.
As the moonlight pierces through the dark, paranormal enthusiast and best friends, Farrah and Courtney venture deep into the woods, armed with flashlights and a sense of adventure.
Farrah, are you sure this is a good idea?
Sure, I'm sure. We're paranormal investigators. We're not scared of any ghosts.
What was that?
Probably some animals. Oh my God. My flashlight is going out.
Following the chilling sounds, the two stumble upon an abandoned and haunted building, its dark silhouette looming over them.
Look, there it is. The abandoned radio station. It's supposed to be mad haunted.
Let's be careful. We don't know what's inside.
Wow, look at this place.
A long growl is heard coming from behind the girls. They turn around slowly, and to their surprise, a zombie is standing in front of them dressed to the nines, wearing a 70s bell-bottom hot pink and purple leisure suit.
Who are you pasty-looking females, and what the heck are you doing in here?
Who are you calling pasty? Nice suit. Did you raid Barry Manilow's wardrobe, or did John Travolta have a yard sale?
Sorry about that. We didn't mean any harm. We're just curious about this place.
Curious, huh? Well, come with me. I got something to show you.
And as they wander deeper into the building, they uncover vintage studio equipment covered in dust and decay.
Farrah, you were looking for a new place to set up your podcast, right?
And this is it?
Whoa, whoa there, sweet cheeks.
No, don't worry. We'll make it worth your while. We love the strange and unexplained phenomena, true crime, macabre, and the sinister. And hey, you'd be a great touch to the show. Maybe be an announcer for us as well.
That does sound stellar. I'm in.
A few minutes later, 12 seconds later, 3 weeks later, many months later.
Okay, we're rolling. Welcome to Studio Sinister Podcast,
where we explore stories that haunt us all.
And then we'll go make a fresh kill to celebrate.
Dawn.
Just kidding.
Join Farrah, Courtney, and Dawn the Zombie on the 1st, 10th, and 20th of every month for some rad, chilling stories.
And if you piss your pants, that's your problem.
Come embrace the haunt. See you soon, Sinister Seekers.